1 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We got our guy Nate Taylor from The Athletic, our Chiefs insider, joining us in studio. We'll talk plenty of Chiefs, but first I have to ask you, are you you should join our bracket challenge. Are you a bracket guy? Do you have one filled out yet?
I am one of these people that loves to do kind of their own research, but also vibes. So look, ladies and gentlemen, you have to fill out the bracket before, what, 6 o'clock tonight when the first game is?
You don't have to do it tonight.
A lot of brackets will let you do it.
No, Nate says it's not honor code.
But it doesn't matter.
You're not picking the first four.
It doesn't matter. This is my point. The tournament starts at whatever, 5:30 today. Yep. Like, get your brackets in, put the money on the table, and let's go. So I'll do it at, like, 3 o'clock today.
Right. You should join our little bracket group we got.
Yes. Text me it so I can so I can join in and show off how poorly I am at judging. Hey, I've never heard of
you
this.
You can join the club.
I talked myself in with some numbers and research and a particular player. I'm like, yeah, that's my guy. Like, I watched like 10 college basketball games that weren't Kansas, Missouri, or K-State.
Right. I also understand, like, it's been a great year. St. John's has never been good since I've been alive, ladies and gentlemen, or this good. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I really need Rick Pitino in my life for another two more weekends.
That's the Legends bracket. Bill Self, Calipari, and Pitino. Legends bracket.
I'm like, I just need you to get to, like, the Sweet 16, Elite Eight. Come on, Rick. I've looked at the bracket. I was convinced. And I talked to my son about this, Hayden, who's 9.5, loves his Kansas Jayhawks. Me on the other side of the rivalry because I really rocked with Norm Stewart and, Keon Dueling back in the day. My dad went to KU, so I clearly had to be the rebel when I was a child. So now we've flip-flopped again, and I just thought the committee, like, if you're going to commit to it, commit to the bit, baby. I don't know if y'all have talked about this, but once it became clear that there's only one region left on Sunday night, I said, just do it. Just give it to us. And then I saw Wichita, and I said, come home. And then they put Drake up, and I said, they put us against a 30-win team? It really should have been. Kansas versus Missouri in the first round.
I wanted it. Now I got to get all
so bad.
But think about the juice that is if the two of them just go on a miracle run.
Please, Lord.
And they both win two games and we get a Missouri versus Kansas Sweet 16.
That'd be great. Baby. That'd be incredible.
With like five days or whatever.
Unfortunately, it'll be all the way out in San Francisco is where the regional is at this year.
If this happens, which, again, I think Missouri...
I think both are winning their first game,
I think Missouri has a slightly better chance just because they can get hot from three, you know? Mm-hmm. I assume Mr. Grills will finally start hitting three-pointers at some point in the next two games is my hope. I think Missouri has a slightly better chance just because they don't have to play a two seed immediately upon beating Arkansas.
Sure.
I watched Arkansas all year.
I think Kansas is winning that
game.
Yeah.
They're all right. They're all right. They're cool.
Yeah, they're pretty mediocre.
They're pretty all right. But, like, if this happens, I will immediately message any editor at The Athletic to pay for me to see this spectacle. And you said San Francisco? Uh-huh. Is this in the Chase Center?
It is.
Oh,
the brand new Warriors building.
I ain't been there yet. I would hit the button immediately. Like, hey, that Chiefs news next week, forget about it. It does not matter. It's MUKU for a spot in the Elite Eight. That would be amazing. I'm super excited for the tournament. I'm excited to see what Cinderella actually
for sure
makes you feel things in your heart.
Yeah, we'll have Drew send you a link to join our bracket challenge. People want us to get back to football. They said, why aren't you talking about football? They said, have we asked Nate his thoughts
Nate
on...
Nate used to cover basketball.
Oh, I know. He's a Pacers guy.
Yes.
But people wanted us to talk... That's right.
Woo!
That as well. People wanted your draft perspective. We were providing some mock draft insight and reading some analysis that were out there
This is what Lance Zierlein had to say about
a pick
that was in a mock draft today.
He is a girthy lower body with big, meaty hands.
Oh, my.
Explosive and violent. Tight throughout his lower
violence.
Body. You don't want to be tight throughout your lower body.
That's
not
right.
Good.
You need to be loose.
That's right. Nate gets it.
Look, guys, I cannot stress this enough to our audience. That's half of scouting. Like, that is half
tight, lower body.
That's all it is. Like, it's just half. Like, okay, now I gotta like talk to people and interview the kid and like watch tape and grind, you know, the background and who the kid is from a makeup, whatever, whatever. But that other, that first half of scouting, all of us could do that. So I love the fact that I knew exactly where you were going. I was like, yep, we've been in rooms together. No, we haven't. But I know exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know what? Pick them. Put them on our board.
What do you think, if anything, has changed? Since we're talking draft, has anything changed with the two recent signings? Because I think a lot of people's worry, certainly mine, Cody's, when they brought back Kareem Hunt, was as long as this doesn't prevent you from drafting a running back to get more explosive, because otherwise you're in the same problem with the backfield. Not that Pacheco, when he's healthy, can't get back to what he was. I think he can,
right?
But he's not an explosive player, and Kareem Hunt's not an explosive player.
Yeah. The reason why, and I want to just take a little bit of a journey here. The reason why Isaiah Pacheco fell to the seventh round is because of the value of the position and the fact that he ran upright. He was a little upright coming through the hole, and he didn't have like the most elusive moves in the open field.
Those things have bared out.
Yes.
Honestly. He's a productive player, but yes, all those things are still true.
But he was very good with his hands. He was an incredible player at college in terms of development, so that you had a track record to follow him. And, of course, he actually caught the ball really well in college. They just never threw it to him because, I mean, have you seen Rutgers quarterback? I mean, it was bad. Anyway, so he kind of got devalued based on the offense he was playing in. But he had enough speed that, like, okay, you can take that guy in the seventh round. Now what you're asking is a combination of these skill sets to where you have a decent amount of size, can catch the football, can have bursts or more perhaps home run top end speed, and maybe make somebody miss in the open field. That's what you're looking for. Gentlemen, is there anybody on the roster who I just said can do all those things?
God, no.
Then let me tell you guys.
Maybe have.
Running back for me. Again, just me, running back for me would be number two on my priority list positions. And I do not think signing Kareem Hunt for a year prevents you from targeting a running back, I think, as early as the second round.
Well, so if they did that, though, then it would be a camp battle for Kareem Hunt and Elijah Mitchell, one of them getting cut, and they'll just eat the $1 million in dead cap, what?
And because of the way the rosters are now built through the CBA, you could always bring that player. Hey, you a vested veteran? Don't answer. Hey, give me your phone, actually. Let me wave you today or let me release you. Give me your phone, and then I'll see you back on Tuesday. Like, you know, because you could be on the practice squad. You know, both guys signed a deal to where they got a nice chunk of change for committing to something now. Obviously, there's a little bit of, I'm assuming, you know, bonuses for workouts, i.e. OTAs, mandatory mini cap situations. And then, yeah. I also want to make this point too. Like, the Chiefs have three tight ends, right? Three legitimate ones. Let's just say three legitimate ones. Assuming Jared Wiley comes back, as much as you can hope for from the ACL. Guys, you can have five running backs or four running backs and a fullback.
They did that in camp last year.
Yeah, you just don't need a fourth tight end. So, they have multiple options at this, but I would think they have to draft a running back. Now I got to look this up because I just want to remind people, and I'm gonna say this stat.
And they're not drafting one in round one though.
We'll see how the board falls. I would say that's probably a little sweet, too sweet for me. I know,
especially after the last time.
I know what you were about to say about Mr. Edwards-Helaire.
Just because you make a mistake doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. I would just never draft a running back in the first round. But like that's like what the Chiefs did for 30 years at quarterback, and it made me nuts.
He better be Jahmyr Gibbs or Bijan Robinson.
Ashton Jeanty's at 31. I'm interested.
Correct.
He'll be gone by like 7, but you know.
Or he'll be gone 12. By like 22.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Depending on, again, I think, because we're going to see some things move here, I think, in the next 2 weeks, because the coaching staffs will get more involved.
Okay.
More will come out of the pre-draft visits, where we get more medical information. We get another, obviously, setting to just observe you and obviously see how you could fit within our scheme, yada, yada, yada. Guys, they have to take a running back because of this stat. Last season, Patrick Mahomes accounted for 72.5% of the offense's yards. The most of any quarterback in the league. No quarterback, while trying to guide his team.
Even more than like Lamar Jackson?
To an unprecedented three-peat, had more of a burden to carry the offense, literally, than Patrick Mahomes without a left tackle that was serviceable. So,
wow.
They need to draft a running back because you need to have as many options possible for short yardage, for passing, you know, out of the backfield to develop somebody over the course of, you know, the life of a rookie contract, which is what you've done with Isaiah Pacheco in two of the last 3 years. The third year was obviously, warped because of the injury, but even still, he came back and he gave you something, you know. So for the offense to get better, I know we'll still talk about the deep ball and how much is left in Travis Kelce's, you know, ability to be obviously a go-to guy, particularly on third down. The easiest way to make the offense raise its floor is with another running back that you can pair with Pacheco, and that maybe you can use Kareem Hunt as a veteran that you use on short yardage, red zone, maybe occasionally out of the backfield, and obviously a change of pace. You want this rookie running back to develop throughout the course of the year, very similar in the way Isaiah Pacheco did in 2022. And then, of course, there's nobody under contract next year who plays running back for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Nate, how do you view the defensive line? I think there's three plans in the defensive line that are left on the table as possible options. One, they can sign a defensive lineman, so like Charles Minnehue, or I'm interested if you got other names, and draft another one.
Sure.
They can, two, not sign a guy like a Minnehue and draft multiple defensive linemen with their first four picks and cover it that way. Or three, they're going to draft one guy, and they're way bigger believers in Felix Anudike Uzama than they have shown up to this point. So, like, what are, like, the most likely outcomes in the defensive line?
I think for both parties, it should be option one.
Right.
I would, you know, I know Charles Amenihue's been tweeting and then deleting tweets.
Yeah, he's emotional.
He's frustrated.
He's emotional about it, yeah.
I get it, too, man. We all done been there in life. What the Chiefs should try to do, and again, some of this kind of swings on the Trey Smith franchise tag, lingering on. But the thing I pushed to both parties is a potential one-year deal because the league wants to see Charles Amenihue for a full year.
They want to see him healthy again.
For a full year, mm-hmm. Yes. Not suspended, for a full year. Mm-hmm. So he can reset his value. Could you create, and I've said this before, similar to like the Hollywood Brown contract, a one-year deal with some incentives attached to it, some of which he can reach, some of which he would obviously have to have a career year to do. And it's not like the coaching staff and the front office doesn't want him back. In actuality, as we just learned, whatever it was, a day or two ago with Justin Reed. Look, man, Justin Reed wanted to return. The Chiefs didn't really have him as a part of their plan. Charles Amenihue is still a possibility in their plan, and they've got to make it work. Plus, you need to draft probably someone who can grow next to Chris Jones in the interior, and that doesn't prevent you from taking another swing at the position in, say, the third or the fourth round, someone that you feel like you can develop into maybe the next Mike Dana. Again, if I was to, you know, suggest things to the Kansas City Chiefs, defensive line would be number one on the draft board priority. Running back would be two. And then you can maybe say maybe cornerback, maybe offensive line, because you should always take something in the offensive line. And then, like, hey, if the board falls a certain way in the third round, I'm not opposed to you taking another receiver.
Or tight end.
Or tight end, yeah, because of the Kelce situation as well. You know, there's a reason that they let Justin Watson and DeAndre Hopkins walk while also retaining Juju Smith-Schuster with the intentions of having another rookie receiver be a part of the mix as well.
We're talking to Nate Taylor, our Chiefs insider here on Cody and Gold. Yeah, what about Juju, the signing there? We were just saying, hey, as long as he's actually the fourth or fifth wide receiver,
perfect.
Then that's good. If they try to stretch more out of it, then that's when I wouldn't be as excited to have him back.
But at least he's shown that for a night or two last year.
The Saints game.
Yeah, he can, if you can scheme it up, he's still capable enough to give you a good game or two if he needs to be elevated to like wide receiver two. Now, last year was a bit of an anomaly because obviously Hollywood never even saw opening day. Rashee Rice is out before October. And of course, you're trying to develop Xavier Worthy, but that plan kind of got, you know, adjusted because of the injuries to those former, to those veteran players as well. So I think for Juju Smith-Schuster, can you be as good, if not a better option than Justin Watson was last year? And hey, if we need you to be a spot starter or two, you've known the offense, you've been in the system long enough, Patrick trusts you, and you know how to run routes off of Travis Kelce, who will obviously get more attention than you.
They're running a lot of it back, and I understand they won 15 games last year. They were in the Super Bowl, despite like how it went. Everybody, you know, we don't. Let's remember,
so it wasn't a bad roster last year. They're returning,
but they're returning a lot. Are they offensively, in your opinion, banking on either A, drafting a running back to get more explosive as well, or just, hey, we never saw Worthy, Rice, and Brown on the field at the same time, and that would have been fine last year. We would have been explosive. Yes. It sure seems like they are banking on, hey, the only reason why this offense struggled, other than left tackle, was that the wide receivers were not the wide receivers we thought we had because they weren't available.
Yes, nothing on paper last year ever met it on the field, guys. Just to remind it, what was on paper was Kingsley Suamataia, the moment they drafted him, was going to be the starting left tackle. That obviously got ripped up in week three.
Yeah, that died quick.
And, you know, their biggest free agent acquisition last year was Hollywood Brown to be the number two receiver to Rashee Rice as he was sort of propelling to the number one wide receiver in their offense faster than they had anticipated in year two, even with Travis Kelce trying to figure out, like, how can we manage him over the course of the season to have him be at his absolute best in the postseason, which is something they learned the previous year. Yes, it's both. I think you're right, Alex. They still want to see the idea in its fruition as best they can. Now, unfortunately, and again, I've heard no issues with Rashee Rice rehab, but again, he will be coming off a somewhat significant knee injury. Not devastating, not extremely significant, but somewhat significant. Xavier Worthy, who kids, y'all done messed up now, because I think he could have an excellent year too if what is on paper actually gets to the field, because Hollywood will have a much better understanding of the offense, let's say week one, than a year ago, for obvious reasons. Travis Kelce will still be reliable. I know that, you know, until proven otherwise, that this is likely his last year, so he will be motivated to do the best he can with what he has left. And we haven't mentioned his name yet, but if Jalen Moore is an upgrade from, let me say all the names, guys, Kingsley Suamataia, Wanya Morris, Joe Tooney, DJ Humphreys. If he's
a non-left tackle, a third-round pick who was hurt, a guy who got benched after two games. Yeah, probably better than those.
Yeah, so if he's an upgrade, then the offense can get back to being having some more rejuvenation compared to the team literally. And you know, this analogy gets put too much or gets said too much, but they had made a plane. it took off. The wing freaking fell off.
They still made it to the Super Bowl.
While in ascent. And they said, oh, we got to rebuild the entire left side of the plane. And they did it in the middle of the season because, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you again, Patrick Mahomes accounted for 72.5% of the yards.
Is there plan at left guard, Kingsley? I would just start Kingsley. I'd just do it today. Like, these are the kind of moves professional NFL teams make. Failed tackles become really good guards, like all the time. It is the failed starter becomes a reliever part of the NFL. It is the one position that everyone universally agrees, like, you could probably play inside, just as long as you're not a total joke. And what's funny, like, Kingsley's like, the first game, he looked okay.
He did.
Man, he looked so bad in the second one that they got rid of him. I mean, that's crazy. Yeah.
Crazy. Someone
got some tape, and they took advantage of it in a hurry.
Really, yeah, and, you know, there's a difference between, like, strength and college and then strengthen the NFL because I want to remind people too, like, you know, when you get to September, no one's hurt yet. No one's dealing with, like,
they're all feeling fresh and healthy. All,
like, Trey Hendrickson got to work on this man. If you're a Chiefs fan, I think the name that you hope, not to say he's going to be identical player for player, but we just saw what Mekhi Becton did going from left tackle to guard. Now,
he had a nice little payday because of that.
Yes, he did. Now, obviously he had to switch teams because the Jets are the Jets, which says more about the Jets than maybe Mekhi Becton. But look, He struggled at left tackle, but at least he played more games than Kiese Suomaitia did as a rookie. True. And then he got moved. Now, he had injuries as well. And so, there's slight differences to all of this. But he got kicked inside and really blossomed last year with the Eagles. One of the reasons why the Eagles won the Super Bowl. They fixed their offensive line by moving a guy that was never projected to be a guard entering the league to guard, and it worked out. Now, Jim Harbaugh's trying to do the same thing where he's just like, I have a really good quarterback who's talented, but you know what he needs? He needs maulers up front. So if Kingsley Suamataia can transition to that starting this upcoming season, you still have Mike Caliendo as a floor to go back to.
He was fine.
I think people should view Mike Caliendo the way they view Andrew Wiley, because no one remembers, but I do, how poor Andrew Wiley looked in Super Bowl 55, because they put him from guard to left tackle, and it went, guard to right tackle, because they moved Mike Remmers from right tackle to left tackle.
They were so fried.
And it was overwhelming. And
Wiley was a nice starting guard for a contending team last year.
Yes, and he moved to tackle and got better and developed under Andy Heck. That's actually probably one of Andy Heck's last success stories. Just put it out there.
People are after Heck now because the offensive line gotten cooked in two Super Bowls.
Well, all right, here's the positive for Andy Heck. He did develop Andrew Wiley to be multi-positional, and he got Nick Allegretti from, a sixth, seventh round draft?
Doesn't he get credit for Trey Smith? I'm not his agent here, but if I was Andy Heck, I would say I'd say I don't get any credit for Trey Smith. I don't get any credit for Creed Humphrey.
The reason he fell to the sixth round.
I understand it was medicals. I know.
The medical situation. I understand,
yeah. This is always the same thing though.
He was self-made on arrival. But you know who was the best center in the league the moment he entered the league?
Creed. But I do kind of hate that notion, because like this happens sometimes with Mahomes.
No, he didn't mess him up.
But that's the only thing. Is like he doesn't get credit for the guys that were perceived to be good coming out, but Kingsley was perceived to be good when he got drafted, but because he wasn't good last year, it's his fault.
I remember him being presented and labeled as all the athletic traits, looks like a left tackle. The feet are, I mean, guys, look at Kingsley Suamataia's left tackle tape at BYU and look at what Orlando Brown's doing right now in the league.
Yeah.
His footwork made people dream, including Andy Reid. You know, he wasn't as refined as you would want. But again, that's hard to do when you're drafting someone late in the second round and he's more of a idea. He's more of a potential than as Creed or as Trey. Built-in products, you can plug them in. You're going to obviously polish some of the last, techniques or whatever, and understanding schemes of what defenses are trying to do in the NFL, which is slightly different than college. But in terms of raw physical talent, like Kingsley had not put it all together, but the hope and the belief was, hey, you got a offensive line coach who played in the NFL at the position for a number of years. You have Andy Reid. Obviously, his background is through tight ends and offensive line coach. You're going to have a quarterback who's not a freaking statue, so that'll help in Patrick Mahomes. And of course, you're going to give him as many first team reps as you can throughout the entire offseason and training camp, which they did. So, again, you could be right about a number of things, and then the games get played, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's why he was a late second round pick, because it's more potential than actual what it is day one as a rookie.
We got Nate Taylor hanging out with us a couple more minutes. We'll on the other side ask you about Trey Smith. You alluded to him and the franchise tag lingering. We'll get the latest, what you're hearing. Could that be coming soon? Or are we going to have to wait till the middle of July? Nate Taylor tells us next. We got Nate Taylor joining us in studio for another couple of minutes. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Nate Taylor from The Athletic, our Chiefs insider. I teased before we went to break what you had said about Trey Smith. Like, hey, maybe that's impacting some moves or this offseason. What's the latest there? We know he has signed the franchise tag. We know the deadline's in the middle of July to reach a long-term deal. Otherwise, he would play under the tag.
Right.
Did they think this would already be resolved? Is this surprising to them even? Where are you hearing?
I don't know if it's surprising. I would say, look, at one point in time, right before free agency, before they, rejiggered all the contracts, especially with Chris and Patrick, that they didn't really have a ton of cap space. I'm on over the cap right now. They're middle of the pack. They could still make a deal or two if they really wanted to, i.e., Charles Omenihu.
Yeah.
One of y'all call the other. What are we doing, guys? That
have
is
a chat.
That makes too much sense for him to come back at this
point. Right. That's what surprises me, I guess, more than the Trey Smith. But in terms of Trey Smith, you know, now that we know that the Bengals actually said what they were going to say, okay, they got Jamar done. T. Higgins is not going to play on the tag for a second year, which would have been criminal in terms of roster building and obviously trying to project money moving forward with the salary cap. The Chiefs are the only team with a player on the franchise tag. It better not get to July. Hell, it better not get to May. You could say, look, from Trey's standpoint, you sign the franchise tag. This is where we're starting. Now, similar to the Chris Jones situation where it's like, okay, we love Aaron Donald. We're not giving you a contract that's better than Aaron Donald.
They got close, but yeah, they didn't get
real close. But that was the hiccup. That was the hiccup the entire time was just like, hey, man, we understand you're great, but like that contract is unprecedented compared to everybody else. Well, guess who has a contract that don't make sense compared to every other right guard right now? I know it's only for a year, but that 23.4, the moment he signed it,
kind of made the number.
That's the number. That's where we starting. Actually, we kind of starting at 24.
Considering that every other position has taken at least a 5% jump, it's actually not that crazy. The lowest jump any of these regular positions take is running back, and that was like a 5 or 6% jump for that.
Correct.
Corner took a 25%.
Also, for jump.
I mean, it took a huge jump, 15.
Let's not forget, it took the running back position to jump up after a historic season unlike any other from Saquon Barkley.
But Derek
that
Stingley,
ended up with a championship.
Stingley took the number from 25 to 30.
Which is wild.
Now there are a few other positions. Guard took a pretty good jump this offseason, too.
Yes. Now, there's a little bit of
some of the reporting with the agents playing the game.
Yeah. No, I looked at the Stingley numbers. They were out officially today. It's not really. It's more like 81 guaranteed, but it's correct. Not nothing. I mean, it's
like 27 and a half, essentially.
Yeah.
So just for context purposes, look, the right guards right now are about $20 million a year. If you want to say left guard because the quarterback's blindside, yada, yada, yada. Okay. You know, Landon Dickerson from the Eagles makes $21 million a year. Trey Smith right now is at 23.4.
Okay, I don't know why I can't just say 22 a year and call it good.
Now, here's what I was about to say, Cody. 23 and a half, but you taking this fifth year. I'm sorry. Like, guess
you're going to be here a minute.
Guess what Chris Jones took, boys? A fifth year. And it'll help us move things around, as you just saw a couple weeks ago before free agency. Hey, we're just going to take that contract. We can dice it up however we want. Here's a little extra cash in your bank account. Now it creates this cap space. So, hey, if you want to be here, which he does, I want to make this very clear to everybody. Trey Smith is not trying to be whatever, whatever, whatever. Whatever's in your mind, that's not the case. He wants to be here.
I'm sure he was psyched to get tagged, honestly, because he was here.
Had he got to free agency, there are some people within the league that thought the Chicago Bears or the New England Patriots were going to give this man $25 million a year.
I think he probably would have gotten that.
So here's where the hiccup is. He's at 23.4 right now. I said, hey, maybe we start at 24. But if, I mean, this isn't tampering, but if I know that like maybe a team is going to offer you 25 on the market, why don't we start at 25.5? Whoa, okay, you're getting out of hand. So again, they're going to have to come to some compromise, of course. I think they will. They've had very good conversations. I don't think much has changed since the combine, other than the Chiefs being like, wait, what? They gonna offer him how much? Hey, call Clark back. Like, call Clark Hunt and be like, hey, I noticed what in the plan. If he even gets a free agency, it's a wrap. So you want to use a franchise tag? Now, we can't use a franchise tag all the way up to July, because that hamstrings you from a salary cap situation. And based on your conversation about Mr. Derek Stingley Jr.,
You need to get him a deal to McDuffie. Yeah.
You need to get a deal by Trent McDuffie before the season starts.
Yeah.
If you're a Chiefs fan, right now you should hope that either before the draft or right after the draft, the Chiefs and Trey Smith come to some agreement. 4-year deal, 5-year deal, don't matter. He's on the team, guys. And then, based on those projections, based on what you are going to do with Patrick's money, Chris's money, a little bit of Creed's money, I guess, at that point. Obviously, the cap is projected to go up. As always, you need to do what you did with Creed Humphrey last year, with Trent McDuffie this upcoming August. Like, get a deal done before we even get to September, much of the same way you did with Creed Humphrey.
I know you got to leave here in just a minute. I'll just ask one more thing about Trent. There was a rumor that, like, last year that she's like, hey, we'd love to pay you. And he's like, nah, we're good. We'll wait. Is there some truth to that? Like, did he, like,
I don't know if it's or a was heat it, thing, but...
Or was it just like a casual conversation? Like, hey, want to get paid now? And he's like, I can wait, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's smart. I think he's been...
No, he was wise.
He's been advised to do that, honestly. Your agent... with the fifth-year option, understands that, like, we could maybe cut it in half. Again, it's smart for the team to try to get ahead of the deal because, ladies and gentlemen, I will say this definitively, and I'm sorry, Cody, the best draft pick that Brett Veach has ever had is Trent McDuffie, full stop.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
It used to be Creed Humphrey. It is not Creed Humphrey anymore. It is...
Because of the value of the position.
Yes.
He's great.
And he's the highest, and I think some people forget this, it's the highest draft pick the Chiefs have ever had under the Brett Veach era.
He hasn't even had a first-round pick like three times.
they've never drafted in the top 20 since Patrick Mahomes existed.
That's a weird thing with Mahomes or with Veach that people are like, he's not good at taking first-round picks. I'm like, no, you are way off on that.
Correct.
He hasn't had a first-round pick three times. He's taken Carl Loftus, McDuffie.
Worthy.
He's taken starters, and then he had one miss in FAU.
Clyde, at least they got use out of for three.
Clyde was good for 2 years. Injuries and things, obviously.
Felix is the one that people obviously.
But that's
are
three hits, two misses, and two did not participate.
You want me to say the thing out loud? You want me to say the thing out
loud? Please. I mean, that was an ownership thing.
I didn't say it, ladies and gentlemen. That was Mr. Gold. But hey, I got the trophy in my hand. Make a pick.
I said that Friday of the NFL draft last year.
2 years now.
Okay, you think I'll go to the owners' meeting in like 2 weeks in when they make whatever rule changes. You think Clark Hunt will acknowledge this on the record?
I don't think so.
Now, hey, man, you had the trophy in your hands. The draft was in Yo City. You got the new airports. The hotels are popping off. You the defending champs. I get it. Make the pick. Do you think he'll acknowledge it?
No.
I mean that, honestly. Because, owners are people too, ladies and gentlemen. Like, hey, the draft is a crapshoot, literally. And this involves people and egos and, different circumstances every year. You cannot look at the draft, and I know I'm going on a soliloquy now, but you cannot look at the draft every year like it's the same thing. That's not true. Circumstances change, rosters change, priorities change, and sometimes...
Off-field circumstances change.
Yes, and sometimes the owner of your football team has the Vince Lombardi trophy in his hand.
In front of the entire city.
And you know what would make this even the cherry on top? He from here? Yeah, do it.
That's the part that was...
He's from here in a position of need? Do it! Now, you still got the fifth-year option on that, just like you have the fifth-year option on Trent McDuffie. So who knows? Maybe Felix Anudike Uzomah progresses in year three and year four.
And I just want him to become a Turk Wharton player.
Yeah, and it actually becomes a better pick than it does after year one or year two. That's fine, but the owner is a person too, and I want him to acknowledge on the record that, hey, man, I got feelings too. It was in my heart. Even though they said we could probably trade down, man, bleep trading down. I got the trophy in my hand. Come on.
Nate Taylor, Chiefs insider from The Athletic. We know you got to run, man. Thanks for coming in studio. Always great insight from Nate. Also, join our bracket challenge. Please.
Yes, sir. We'll do.
Please do that.
Come on, Dennis Gates. Give me one. Give me one run, baby. Come on.
I think that's out of the question.
Oh, my goodness.
While we were in break, we also got the renderings for the Cleveland Browns Stadium.
Yeah, very cool.
Looks like it's going to be outside of Ohio, or outside of Cleveland, Ohio, Ohio in general.
That'd be really weird.
Outside of Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, there's a lot of borders over there. That old, Cincinnati, Ohio, Louisville
That's
triangle.
True.
I don't understand. There's a lot of, I feel like it's just a lot of borders over there, and I don't understand.
That's true. What is it? What is it? I get the cities confused. The airport for Indianapolis is in Louisville. Is that right, or something in Kentucky, or something like that? Yeah, it's something. What is
Cincinnati's
it?
Cincinnati's airport is in Kentucky.
Yeah, that's
it
what
makes
it is.
No sense.
That's what it is. Yeah, thank
Cincinnati
you.
Cincinnati International is in Kentucky.
Yes,
sure. Of course.
But no,
why not?
The video renderings look really cool. I think what we were discussing during the break about it is, and we all know the Chiefs and Royals are still trying to figure out what they want to do. But just from a rendering perspective. that Browns rendering, much like the Tennessee Titans stadium, it doesn't look like everybody else's stadium from the outside.
No,
that's what's kind of cool about the renderings versus kind of the typical oval shaped or whatever stadium. The Titans stadium in Nashville looks like, you know, like a sports bar from the outside to a certain extent. And then the inside, it's this unbelievable football stadium. Versus just the same cookie cutter stuff, which I think has also been a complaint from some people. Take away the moving from KC or from Missouri to Kansas or not, whatever happens there. It's just like, hey, we don't want the stadium to look like the cookie cutter, brand new retractable roof stadiums that everybody has.
Well, especially because Arrowhead is unique. Part of what makes it special is its uniqueness, right? The football shaped scoreboards, if you will, or just the way in which the concourses were built between the two stadiums and all the other stuff. They have unique features. This one looks huge because obviously it's a lot of what like John Sherman talked about before, like mixed use development.
That's why the Browns are going to the suburbs.
It looks like a massive run up just to get to the stadium. And then inside the stadium, there are, some unique features that don't look like any other stadium that I've seen put out there, or rendering that I've seen put out there. I understand there's a limit, right? When you're making a gigantic rectangle that has to have a rectangle in the middle of it, or a circle that has to have a rectangle in the middle of it. But this one does look unique.
Yeah, and I don't know if they've gotten it fully approved out in Cleveland yet anyway, or the Cleveland area. $2.4 billion is the price tag. And the owners, the Haslams, have said they've had a pitch for half the cost, are going to the public for half the cost, is at least the reporting out of the Cleveland area for what they're looking for. $1.2 billion in public financing for an enclosed stadium in Brook Park.
Enclosed, no outside? That doesn't feel like Cleveland football. That's just the way of the land. But
it does say they haven't given up on convincing the state and the county there in the Cleveland area to issue bonds to bridge the gap. So they are still also not done yet. They figured out where they want to go, unlike maybe here, but they haven't figured out the public financing mechanism there either.
No.
Think about how many new stadiums. I mean, I get it, it's cyclical kind of thing, but the Bills are a year away from building. The Bears want a new one. Yeah. Cleveland wants a new one. Nashville's building a new one. The Broncos are talking about renovating or building a new stadium. The Chiefs are obviously talking about renovating or building a new stadium. The Texans have already decided that they want to now renovate their stadium. What is that? Did I just list six stadiums the next 7 years, 5 years that are going to be new and renovated in the NFL? It's kind of wild. And some of those aren't even that old. The Texans stadium, while it does need renovating, was built in what was that, 03?
How old is Mile 05? High?
Mile High, the new Mile High or whatever at the time was viewed as new Mile High. I don't know. That's a good question.
I'm kind of surprised that they're already talking about it. I don't think it's been around too long, but I could be completely wrong.
They were in talking Power about
Field,
they got like renovations, I feel
open
like.
Open in 01. It's still so it's coming up on the 25th year, and it's like, oh, it's time to renovate or build a new one.
Should I be thankful that like they built Arrowhead so sturdily that we did not need a new one in at least 50 years, 60 years, you know?
If you compare it to some of these other places, they only got 20 years, 25 years out of their stadium. I mean, there is some truth to that for sure. The Texans NRG Stadium, I think it's called now. It was like Reliant Stadium before. It opened in 02, so just like the Broncos. Obviously, what was the other one I mentioned that they're talking about? Nissan Stadium is a dump there in Nashville.
Yeah, and that's the ones that frustrate you. How did you guys screw this up so bad?
99 is when that was built. That's just like a truly concrete, no thrills dump.
It's in a cool spot, but it's...
Sure it is. Yeah, Nashville's great. And their new stadium rendering looks awesome.
Like right by the lake or the whatever river. Whatever river it is.
I don't know. I don't know rivers of Nashville, I'm afraid.
Would that be the Mississippi? No, Cumberland. Sorry, Cumberland River.
Big enough. There's bridges, a lot of bridges, like nice bridges. But anyways, we don't need to talk about bridges.
What other waterways do we need to talk about today? You know,
well, the Bengals are next to the Ohio River, and there I think they've had talks about renovating or potentially relocating down the line. It's not now by any means, but they're within the next 4 or 5 years. They're going to be talking about it too, I think.
Someone's like, yeah, Arrowhead got a good batch of concrete. That's, you know, we got a good batch of concrete here at Arrowhead.
Good batch, bad batch.
Bad batch in Mile High, bad batch everywhere else.
Is that a surprise that a quarter of the league is potentially looking at that stuff, or is it?
It's weird that it's happening right at this time because we're talking about the Chiefs as well, so that's probably why it feels weird, but yes.
Yes, but also I think part of it is just look at where the economics of the sport have grown and how much money is in it and how much more money is to be made. They're not stupid or bad business people. The final 180 seconds of the show, the Cody Gold 180, brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Results every week and then receive free support for life online at awaken180weightloss.com. But yeah, it's not surprising to me because it's just such big business. What's interesting to me is
they all want the new revenue opportunities with the suites and everything else, premium spaces, premium areas.
Some owners aren't smart enough.
Clark's not even trying to do like the multi-use stuff yet. Like that's not even been discussed when they were trying to get the regular Arrowhead. They were willing to just stay with a gas station and a Taco Bell across the street and a burnt down Denny's. They just wanted like renovations to keep
officially yet.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it burned down quite a while ago.
Yeah, over a year now.
So
at least
I don't think they're trying to save that one. Do you?
Yeah.
Do you?
People are asking us where the draft party is this year. We will have some sort of announcement at some point over the next couple of weeks, I believe. But
yeah, we
will be doing something. Yes, but I don't believe we've gotten the go ahead to announce that from the boss.
So we'll let you know.
Yeah.
On that front.
But there is going to be something
in the works.
Yep.
Yeah. In the works. So I guess. You know, stay tuned all the time. Leave 96.5 The Fan. Just listen constantly, and then you'll hear it eventually.
If you are having issues joining our bracket challenge here on Cody and Gold, maybe you can also DM Drew on Twitter at Drew B. Nix.
Multiple people have already. Yep.
And he will try sending you the link there if the text line has not worked.
It works, it works every time, apparently.
A lot of
Twitter.
You have gotten it to work through text, but we know some of you are having issues. You can join the bracket pool. We'll have a prize pack for the winner. And appreciate those of you that have already joined. Looks like we gained a good amount of people again today. So that's awesome.
There's a lot of people who have also completed almost two pages.
I filled mine out, but I reserve the right to
I've made three adjustments
renovate,
already. Cody, I've changed my final four twice already.
I haven't made a single solitary pick in mine yet.
Did you print out a bracket earlier?
Earlier,
this computer
I got
just
an
said,
alert that said printer.
Yes,
you see that too? And it said bracket.
Wait, what? Did you print out a bracket earlier?
I did.
Just be warned. So anytime you print anything, I know what you're printing.
Yeah, if it says Drew's resignation before, we're gonna know. Don't print it off here. Don't print it. If it says Drew's, upset. If it says Drew's application, anything, we're gonna know.
So I always print a bracket out beforehand and I write the whole thing down. That's my official one. This one is more like
handwritten bracket.
Oh yeah,
old school.
I go and I take notes. So
old soul,
notes. The one that I just printed out during breaks, I'm going and I'm taking notes on a few different games and everything like that. I'm trying to.
Ooh.
I take it way
You'll
too.
You'll finish last because of this. That's how brackets work. Not your own doing.
Way too seriously.
All this research gets you nowhere in bracket pools sometimes.
Most of the time, it is completely and totally useless. The best year I've ever had, I got 13 out of the 16, 7 out of the 8, all Final Four and the championship.
Last year, we looked at, the winner or listener was named Jack, believe, was the winner.
Yes.
I think, Drew, it was you, then me, then Cody,
it was
and finish.
Start for me.
Cody got
Through
off to
the
a
Sweet
great
16,
start.
I was in first place.
Cody was way towards the top.
At the Sweet 16, I was in first place. All my teams lost.
And then he lost the Final Four. And so once the Final Four hit, you and I gained a ton of ground because we still had UConn, I think, winning it or alive or whatever it is. But Drew will get you hooked up on the bracket. We're back at it tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit more about tonight's action too, right? North Carolina, San Diego State. We'll talk more tourney tomorrow on the show. For now, though, we hand it off to C-Dot and Rob on the drive.